3:45 p.m. Eastern Wartime. WEAF, New York.
The Right to Happiness, usually heard over most of these stations at this time, will not be presented today in order that we may bring you the special program that follows. It will be heard at its regular time tomorrow. The National Broadcasting Company brings you at this time the noted news analyst, H.V. Kaltenborn, with a mid-afternoon summary of the news.
Good afternoon, everybody. It's quite possible that before this broadcast is completed, we will be able to take you to London for an on-the-spot broadcast by one of our observers. But in the meantime, while we're checking up on the signal, I will carry on. Allied invasion forces have cleared the enemy from all of their beachheads in French Normandy. Today, they are fighting their way inland. The first heavy German counterattacks in the Caen area have already been beaten off. We have probably occupied the town of Bayeux near Caen, and the first mail has been delivered to our soldiers in France. Weather in the English Channel cleared up this afternoon, which helps enormously, both for air and overseas operations. The American, British, and Canadian assault forces are being reinforced constantly. Hundreds of gliders are shuttling thousands of troops into the Cherbourg Peninsula. Surface craft in large numbers are sailing into the coast. Large areas of French coastline have been freed from the Germans and are now available for safe landings. General Eisenhower's headquarters tells us that heavy fighting is raging inshore. The Germans are striking back against the expanding perimeter of the beachheads. They are putting up little resistance in the air and none at sea. The Berlin radio has just admitted that the Allies landed between 2 and 5 more divisions in France yesterday and last night. We lost 12 gliders and 12 C-47 transport planes during the past 24 hours in these transport operations. We must assume that Marshal Erwin Rommel is speeding armored and infantry divisions to the invasion zone. A full-scale counter-onslaught should develop within 24 hours. The more troops and material we are able to land before that assault comes, better our chances of hanging on. All our reports indicate that the situation improved considerably last night and early today. Sharp German armored counterattacks in the Caen area, 9.5 miles inland, have been beaten off. The Germans tell us we are now using 100 tanks in an offensive in that single area. The Germans may be emphasizing the importance of our mechanized equipment here to explain the setbacks which they are experiencing here. The Berlin radio has just reported that the Germans lost Bayeux. This town, close to the Normandy shore, is 16 miles northwest of Caen on the railway and highway to Cherbourg. It would probably be the first town we could take, since it is not far inland and lies between 2 of our well-established beachheads. Bayeux is near the center of our most concentrated operations on the Normandy Peninsula. This afternoon, 500 of our biggest bombers, escorted by fighters, attacked the road junctions in the Bayeux area. We are trying to isolate the strongly defended port of Cherbourg against the possibility of any German reinforcements. All beaches have now been cleared of the enemy in this area. Some of them have been linked together. This strengthens our position against counterattack. Our airmen report that the Normandy Peninsula today is dotted with fires. Some suggest that the Germans are carrying out demolitions preparatory to withdrawal. This seems over-optimistic. Shell fire and air bombs set many fires, and perhaps some forest fires. The Germans are following their usual practice of transporting troops by air to meet any sudden threat. British planes shot down 5 big Junkers 52 transport planes while on missions over France. The German radio says that Allied forces today attempted a landing in the Calais area of the French coast along the Straits of Dover. Berlin also asserts that Allied ships approached the French coast from the north, apparently bound through the Dover Straits for the invasion area. This may well be true, but we must be careful in interpreting what it means. There will be all kinds of feints and diversions to keep the Germans busy. Even a landing might be nothing more than a commando raid. The more we keep the Germans stirred up at many places, the less likely they are to concentrate against us at the right places. The Germans also report brisk fighting at the Saint-Mère-Église town. This town is at the southeastern base of the Cherbourg Peninsula. They say it involves the American 82nd and 101st Airborne Divisions. British tanks and infantry have occupied a 25-mile stretch of the Normandy coast. They have already pushed inland nearly 3.5 miles and have cut a coast road vital to the Nazi movement of reserves. It looks today as though the Allies have established one continuous beachhead from Cannes to Bayeux. This gives us 25 miles of excellent flat beach on the eastern coast of the Normandy Peninsula. And now to London for a direct report.
This is W.W. Chaplin in London, the spokesman of General Eisenhower's Supreme Headquarters. Allied Expeditionary Force are singing a chorus of caution about the invasion tonight. They show evidences of anxiety that a spirit of over-optimism may result from the truly astounding success of the first phase of our invasion. The reaction, if events should grow more somber, might be damaging. Now, it may not all be like the first phase. During the past 2 days of our fighting men have been cold and wet. They've eaten what and where and when they could. They are very tired. They have not yet got their second wind. Only superb leadership under such conditions can prevent a perfectly natural dip in the invasion grass. So, chafe cautions against optimism, urges sober satisfaction. And Londoners, at least, are heeding that caution. There is an almost dreamlike quality about the British capital. We're so close and yet so detached. The people give no outward signs of the emotions which flame, of course, inside them. And that, I think, is good. They know the die is cast and are glad of it. But they await far more decisive days before they give vent to those emotions. At least, as Chafe desires, until our men have got their second wind. Our own little underground, improvised broadcasting home here, source of the news for all American radio listeners, had a distinguished visitor this afternoon. Mr. Brendan Bracken, Member of Parliament, and Mr. Churchill's Minister of Information, dropped by informally to see how the American broadcasters are making out. He found a lot of unshaven and weary broadcasters hard at work. Some were in once neat uniforms, now wrinkled because they've been used to sleep in on tables and even on the floor. Others in GI battle uniforms, men just back from assignments that took them to the invasion beaches or far behind enemy lines with the paratroops and glider soldiers. The floor was littered with papers. The atmosphere was full of smoke and noise. Shouted questions and answers, clacking typewriters, ringing bells. Occasionally, from a studio door that quickly opens and closes, the tense voice of a broadcaster telling the latest invasion news to American listeners. Mr. Bracken asked if there were any complaints. And there was one. The shortage of Scotch whiskey in the bar across the corridor from the radio newsroom. Mr. Bracken pointed out that the liquor allotment went back several years to the time when the ministry housed a famous university. Now, he admitted, things are different. And he said that he'd do everything in his power to increase the supply of available Scotch. And now, back to H.B. Kaltenborn in New York.
That caution that Chaplin has just given us from London with regard to over-optimism is undoubtedly needed. It has been almost impossible for us here to resist a feeling of elation over the outstanding success achieved by our early invasion operations. Of course, those of us who have studied the matter realize that there is much that remains to be done, that there are many reasons for caution about the German counterattack, which is not yet developed, that there have been difficulties and there have been losses. And I noted today in the first dispatch that I've seen from Hanson W. Baldwin since the invasion began, the dispatch in which he represents the combined American press that has just come in. He reports from Admiral Kirk's flagship off the French coast that we do not yet have any right to rejoice, as he puts it, over the initial success of invasion. He saw that word, rejoice, in a dispatch from America. And so he says, the word rejoice strikes an incongruous, almost a brutally callous note here in the Bay of Seine, in waters where American bodies lie fathoms deep, near beaches whose blood-drenched names will be forever emblazoned on the battle streamers of regimental colors, forever recorded in the history of our people. It is a word which epitomizes a lack of comprehension of the grim issues here involved, of the long chances and hard struggles ahead. It signifies a sense of overconfidence, and hence is repugnant to the men who are doing the fighting and who know the hard and relentless strength of the enemy. In one sense, however, rejoicing is understood. This operation has been so long prepared, and the war of nerves so great, that there is a positive sense of relief when the first shots are fired, and when one knows that now the grapple to the death has been started. Yes, that tells the story as it is seen and felt by one who is at the scene and who knows that death has come to many a brave American. And yet, with all proper allowance for caution, the Germans themselves tell us that the Allies have occupied a circular area between Valognes and Carentan on the eastern side of the Cherbourg Peninsula. They also admit that we have opened a corridor to the coast. The forces holding this pocket, they tell us, are now being reinforced by sea and air. And this means that our paratroopers, who landed inland, have now joined up with our beachhead forces in this area. The Russian military experts take the same optimistic view of the initial success achieved by our landing operations that has been taken by some sources in this country. The military analyst in Izvestia, for example, said these conclusions could be drawn from operations thus far. One, the Germans proved powerless to prevent the landing of large Allied forces on a comparatively large sector of the coast of northern France. Two, the Allied fleet and air force hold unchallenged supremacy. Three, the fortifications which the Germans have been extolling for so long, the notorious Atlantic Wall, failed to withstand the concentrated fire of naval artillery and the hail of bombs of the Allied Air Force. This Russian analyst says the Germans have three armies in France, one in the north, that's the zone of our landings, one is on the Bay of Biscay coast, that's near Spain, and one on the south coast, the Côte d'Azur on the Mediterranean. The Russian analyst did not say so, but he might have added that the Germans do not dare to use either their western or their southern armies against our attack in the north, for they know we have invading armies still available for landings not only in the north, but in addition to those that we might land in the north. We have armies that are poised for the invasion of western France, other armies that are poised for the invasion of southern France. And so, obviously, with all due allowance for that necessary caution, which we must have since the invasion has only begun, with all due allowance for that, there is a definite demonstration during these first 36 hours of the failure of the German Atlantic Wall, of the failure of that German air resistance about which we were so uncertain, of the failure of the Germans to develop any sea power to meet us in the Channel. And so, on that larger issue of German immediate ability to react, we are right. We have the right to be optimistic. Good afternoon.
You have been listening to the noted news analyst H.B. Kaltenborn with a mid-afternoon summary of the news. The Right to Happiness, sponsored by Ivory Soap, usually heard over most of these stations, was not presented today in order that we might bring you the special program just concluded. Right to Happiness will be broadcast at its regular time tomorrow. This is the National Broadcasting Company.